Waitress is a 2016 Broadway musical based on a 2007 film about a waitress and baker named Jenna. When she discovers she's pregnant with her abusive husband's baby, she turns to a local pie baking contest as a way to escape her life. Her and her other waitress friends deal with twists in their lives and relationships along the way, including Jenna finding herself having an affair with her gynecologist. Yeah, it's pretty yikes. My guest today is Donnell Benton, who is really just trying to see every person cast as Jenna on Broadway. A small note before we begin, this is the second to last episode of Season 3. To mark the occasion, I made a short listener survey to learn more about what you want to hear in Season 4. You can go to the link in the description to find the survey. Now, I hope you enjoy our conversation about Waitress. Hello, Janelle. How are you?
Hi, Quinn. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. What are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about one of my favorite shows. I love this show so much. The one, the only, Waitress, the musical.
Now, most of the time when people come on this show, I say, hey, person, do you want to come on? And they say, yeah. Well, sometimes they say no, but usually they say yeah. And then I say, what do you want to talk about? And then they pick a show. Janelle, who's previously been on for the talk about The Great Comet of 1812, I turned to her one day and said, Janelle, you have to come on to Corner and talk about Waitress.
Which I am very happy to do. I talk about Waitress enough in like my regular life that this just feels natural.
How many times have you seen it now?
So I've seen Waitress on Broadway 4 times now.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen every Jenna since you moved there?
I think so. I've seen since moving Nicolette Robinson. Actually, since moving, I've seen Nicolette Robinson and Shoshana Bean. I think there was one person before them I did not see, Catherine McPhee.
I thought you did see Catherine McPhee.
I didn't. No, I was going to go see her, and then I heard Nicolette Robinson was taking over, and absolutely no offense to Catherine McPhee, but I put off seeing it to go see Nicolette because obsessed.
All right. Oh my gosh. I guess we can just jump right into this in the beginning, because the revolving door of star-studded Waitress cast replacements never ceases to amuse me. Have you heard the latest one?
Who?
Todrick Hall and Colleen Ballinger.
Oh, yes, I did hear this, yes.
Which is kind of adorable. I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm a fan. It's interesting because I feel like there are two kinds of, like, famous people being like cast in Waitress, and it very much is dependent on the role. Like, it feels like you have like Jenna and Dr. Pottermore, and those two, they tend to like cast like really famous Broadway people. And then for kind of like the, especially like the Ogie, Dawn, and not so much anymore, but for a minute there, Old Joe, you get like a combination of like Broadway famous people, like TV famous people. Like, I feel like that they like have like a broader mix of people.
I mean, they had Al Roker playing.
I saw Al Joe Roker.
How was he?
He was good. I mean, he is not an actor. And I think no one would have mistaken him for someone who has been acting their whole life. But he was good. And he sang surprisingly well. I was not necessarily expecting it.
That was the most tactful sentence I've heard in my entire life.
It was very, because he wasn't like super necessarily skilled at acting, you very much knew you were like watching Al Roker play Old Joe. But like, it was a good time. It's not that huge of a role, so it wasn't like he was talking all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was playing lead or anything and
yeah,
pulling you out of the story or something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't like Al Roker as Jenna, so it was good.
I would go see that.
I would 100% go. Might have a rough time with some of the belting, but I'd see him.
But I feel like the Waitress cast replacement thing started where they were like, oh, we're going to have Sarah Bareilles come and play Jenna. And we were like, oh, that's cool, because Sarah Bareilles wrote the music. And mm-hmm. We're like, that's cool that they're doing that.
And then they're like, and then Jason Mraz is going to be the
I also saw Jason Mraz.
Oh my God. And we were like, oh, okay, yeah, interesting. Yeah. And then it just like kept happening. And we were like, oh, this is a thing.
Yeah, Jason Mraz was interesting. So I've seen now 4 Jennas and 3 Pottermers.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Gelling is, he just is the role.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He just owns that role. Though Jeremy Jordan had the voice of an angel. Jason Mraz was good, but it was a very different character. Like, very different.
How so?
Okay, so this was a while ago, but he was, like, more... Dr. Pottermore is supposed to be, like, dorky and clumsy, but he was, like, to the, like, 10th degree of it.
That's interesting.
Like, I remember they changed, so there's, like, one line where, like, the nurse is, like, I don't know if this stuff flies in Connecticut. And they changed it to, like, what was it? I think it was, I don't know if this stuff flies in Seattle. I think it was Seattle, because, like, they were, like, oh, he, like, apparently, like, didn't think it was, like, his performance was, like, a Connecticut kind of guy.
That's so funny. Yeah, I would have a hard time, I think, believing Jason Mraz as anyone who is not from LA or, I guess, potentially the Pacific Northwest. They may be opted for.
Like, it was a very, like, his, like, character was, like, exceptionally, like, quirky, mm-hmm. how he played it. It was good. It was just different.
I mean, the man owns an avocado farm. He's going to have some stuff to do that character.
Of course, he has an avocado farm. Yeah, he was very much Dr. Pottermore who owns an avocado farm.
It's interesting because I feel like with a lot of shows, of course, there are like major cast replacements. And sometimes you have people who are very well known for other roles or other things coming in. But usually, like, once a show is kind of established, then people don't really pay that much attention to the cast replacements. And they're just sort of like... The diehard fans who were like, oh, like, did you see how so-and-so did the riff different and whatever? But I think that with Waitress, they have pulled in so many different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And they've really been like, we're going to do a lot of different stuff. And you'll be able to see, like, very different interpretations of these characters.
Yes. And it's very interesting because, like, I feel like Waitress has a lot of, like, famous people casting. But it... very rarely has, like, stunt casting. Like, I think there can be, like, a distinction between that. Like, you look at something like Chicago, for example, and, like, you have, like, Chicago, like, the people who they get, like, famous people to be in it, like, they have to, like, have the skills and, like, have the chops to do the role. But, like, it's very much, like, you, like, they're being cast in a large part for their following, I think. Like, I think it tends to be, like, people who, like, maybe have never been involved in, like, anything musical theater, like, when Chicago casts, like, a, like, outside famous person. Whereas I feel like for a large part, Waitress, though they'll, like, cast famous people, like, most of them, like, have some connection to, like, the musical theater world.
Yeah, I think it's very rare for any them to have these cast replacements who are, like, making their Broadway debut, that kind of thing. Like, they're more mainstream people a lot of the times, but they're still, like, pretty well established, or at least have, like, very established careers elsewhere in the musical realm, in the case of Jason Mraz.
Oh, Jason, yeah.
Well, I wanted to know, where did your love affair with Waitress begin?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of weird, and I don't actually remember when, like, where I found out originally about the musical. So the musical is based off of a 2007 movie, and it was, like, this, like, indie film also called Waitress. I saw that movie when I was pretty young, like, sometime in middle school or high school, before the musical premiered at the ARRT. Hmm. Before I knew what the ARRT was. And I remember, because I was so young, I thought it was fine, but I didn't love the movie. Like, I remember thinking, like, the whole, like, pie sequences were weird, and, like, it was, like, kind of slow, and just not really being that into it. And then it was years later that I don't remember if I already knew about the musical at this point, but, like, I saw the movie again when I was, like, in college and loved it. I was like, wow, this is great. And heard the music of a musical, was like, this is great. And I saw it for the first time in summer of 2017 and was hooked on Waitress.
And the rest is history.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned the show was at the American Repertory Theater before its Broadway run, which is the ART, which also developed Great Comet of 1812, which you also talked about.
And Jagged Little Pill.
The ART is, God bless, an amazing, amazing theater.
Ugh, everything about them.
Yes. But you didn't see it when it was at ART.
No, I didn't see it. So that would have been...
Fall of 2015.
Fall of 2015. So I guess I would have been a sophomore in college. Yeah, I just didn't see it.
It's been almost 4 years, and I'm still mad about this. just a brief detour for me to rant about something is that I've never seen Waitress. And the reason
Wait, you haven't?
No. I've never seen it. Janelle's going to faint. But here's the thing. I'm a big fan of ART. I had our freshman year had seen Finding Neverland, which is sort of like the big Broadway bound show at the ART, which Jeremy Jordan was in actually. And then the next year they had Waitress, and I was going to go see it. The ART has a very generous standing room policy where you can get standing room tickets to shows for like $10 or something like that. And I was like ready to go. And the thing is, I was dating someone at the time, and we like made plans to go on a certain day, and then he didn't feel well, and so we couldn't go see it then, and then we just never ended up going to see it. And you know what? He was a terrible person, and I should have just gone to see Waitress by myself, but I was waiting to see with him, and I never did, and I still have not seen it.
One, I'm very sorry. Two, we have to see Waitress.
I know. But yeah. And so I was just mad about it for years until I finally, like, started listening to the music.
I think that's fair. I didn't, like, really know about it back then, so it wasn't super on my radar. So I don't feel – I feel sad that I didn't see it, but not as sad. But that sounds mildly traumatic to have, like, been so close.
I have very few times where I was like, oh, I could have seen that show, but I didn't. At least in adulthood, like, I'm pretty good at being aware of shows going on around me and all that. But this one really was just the one that got away.
Yeah, no, the ART just, like, pumps out amazing, like, innovative musicals. I never saw it at the theater, but in college I was in a show that was in the same theater, like a student show that was in the same theater that Waitress had been in the ART, and I remember standing there and just thinking, this is where Waitress premiered. I'm like, I'm performing on the same stage that Waitress premiered. Jesse Mueller sang She Used to Be Mine right here.
That is so cool. Oh my god. That actually brings me to something else I wanted to touch on, which is that we were in a show choir. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows I was in a musical theater show choir. And the last song we ever sung with that group was Opening Up with Rachis.
It was, first of all, one of my favorite numbers that our group did. I love the song. The number was also excellent. We did have apron choreography, made my life. And it was just such, it was funny because it sounds like it would be at the beginning of the show, like to open up, but it was actually the last number of our senior show. And it was so happy, sad. Like, the lyrics are so, like, hopeful for the future, which I think that's, like, the goal of you leaving college. You want to feel hopeful for the future. But yeah, it was just a great song.
Yeah, and we started with What's Inside, which is like this little short kind of a cappella song before that leads into Opening Up. And it may sound like a very simple song, but when you're trying to do
an
a cappella arrangement for 25 people who do not sing a cappella, it gets very difficult.
It sounded so beautiful, though.
It did.
And
yeah.
Oh, the harmonies on that song were amazing.
We did manage to pull it together. No thanks to almost anyone except for our music director, so we did it. No, that was a good, and that's that. But that's the thing that was also like, we decided to end our show with opening up. Thing about the shows is all of them are strung together with a very loose plot. Which recently someone had an epiphany that that's basically what Mamma Mia is.
Yes.
But which is amazing.
100%.
Yeah. So our plot ended up putting opening up at the end because the thing was like we were opening up a show in the canon of our show anyway. But they, in the actual musical Waitress, opening up is the starting song, but they do a reprise of it as their finale. So it really works well that way. Like you were just talking about, the lyrics are very much like, oh, it's the start of a new day, but it can be like the start of the show or looking towards the future, start of a new day.
Oh, it's so beautiful and so sad and happy and happy. Just like Waitress the musical.
Oh my gosh. One more thing about sort of the production of this before we get into the nitty gritty is, Waitress, which was a show in the 2015-2016 Broadway season, is the first show on Broadway to have an entirely female creative team. First musical on Broadway. So, one, great. Two, 2015 is very late for that to happen.
Yeah, that's very sad, but it's the first one in 2015, but amazing for the show.
Yeah. And it also, it was... There, I was looking this up, and there actually were two shows previously that had technically had an all-female creative team, but it was just basically Molly Newman and Barbara Damischek did a couple of musicals called Runaway and Quilters that technically is an all-female creative team because one wrote all of the books and book and lyric and everything, and one directed and choreographed. But Waitress has the distinction of, like, it's four separate women. They got four whole women, you guys, to do all of those pieces. Book, music, and lyric, direction, choreography.
Four? Where did they find four whole women? Oh my god.
That's all of them.
They must have really searched for them. I know, there's none left anymore.
Every woman is in the Waitress creative team. Yeah. And they didn't win any Tonys, but...
Which is a crime, but that's fine.
It is, but it was the same year as Hamilton, so...
Okay, fair. Wait, it was?
Yeah. It was the 2016
award.
That's
so... I feel like Waitress has existed longer than Hamilton. Wow.
I know. It really feels like that, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if it was another year, they probably would have won some, but there was just no standing against... I think Jessie Mueller would have had a really good chance of lead act because her performance
was... Oh, wait. It was that year because... Oh, my gosh. Actually, this is reminding me. I think how I first actually got into Waitress the musical... was seeing Jessie Mueller's Tony performance on stage alone with that couch and then like the curtain. Oh my gosh, that was it. That was how I got into the musical.
Oh my god, that's a breathtaking performance. I'm going to link that in the description because it's Jessie Mueller is amazing and her as Jenna is just, obviously I haven't seen her live, but just like even in videos you can tell how absolutely breathtaking she is. And I think that any other year she would have won. But Cynthia Erivo won because Cynthia Erivo, so.
Fair. Oh my gosh. Oh, I forgot about that. That was it. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. General shout out to Sarah Bareilles writing the music and lyrics, which are phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Shout out to Diane Paulus, goddess of our life.
Diane Paulus. Oh my gosh. I love her. I am obsessed. She is just, I think there was like an entire period of time, like when Jagged Little Pill was coming out and like whenever new news announced by her, I think every time I texted you something I said my goddess comma Diane Paulus.
that's her full name.
Good time.
That's her legal name.
Yeah, it's actually on her birth certificate. They just knew.
Yeah, she is amazing. And Diane Paulus is the artistic director of the ART, so she's involved in a lot of projects. So Jagged Little Pill is coming to Broadway, and apparently she is directing a revival of 1776 on Broadway, which I'm very intrigued
Which is
about.
Going to be a time. I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's like, if anyone else was reviving 1776, I'd be like, is this the time? But since Diane Paulus is doing it, I'm like, okay, I'm interested.
Same. I mean, if she managed to make Pippin, which I am not a huge fan of Pippin, like, made Pippin interesting, I'm excited to see what she'll do.
Maybe she'll put acrobatics in 1776.
I mean, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I want to see something bold. I just want to talk about the music in this show because it's so beautiful. So the really funny thing about my experience with Waitress is I didn't know the plot of Waitress until I looked it up a couple minutes ago, which isn't strictly true.
Wait, really?
So it's, I've listened to the soundtrack enough times that I like knew what was going on more or less, but I've never seen it and I'd never looked up the plot fully. And so there were still some details that I didn't know. And I was like, I guess I should look them up if we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the soundtrack. I feel like a lot of musicals nowadays, especially, are more sung through.
Mm-hmm.
And you can like get a lot of the plot just by listening to the soundtrack. I don't think Waitress is like that. I think Farrah, like, you can get the general theme of the plot, but there's like significant like plot things that happen in between songs.
The thing is, if you know who all the characters are, you can get most of it, but I didn't really know who the... So, if you don't know who the characters are, it's very confusing. But I've just seen enough videos and little bits and pieces of it throughout time that I've just sort of, like, picked up who is who. Because for, like, years, I didn't know who Joe was. And then one day... and then I was, like, listening to the soundtrack, like, the full soundtrack through for the first time, maybe. And I was like, I don't know what this song is. And then eventually I learned that there's a character named Joe and he gives out wisdom.
Yeah, because you would literally only know Take It From an Old Man, and you'd be like, what is this song doing here? Like, if you just listened to the soundtrack.
I was like, is this just a random customer who's just, like, decided to share his old man wisdom with Jenna?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I also didn't know how the show ended until I just checked about an hour ago.
I cried last time I saw Waitress. I cry so much when I see Waitress.
Earlier I told a friend I think I've cried at roughly 80% of all Broadway shows I've ever gone to see, so yeah. But no, I want to talk about some of the music, starting with the most beautiful song in the world, She Used to Be Mine.
Oh my gosh.
She is messy, but she's kind. She is lonely most of the time. She is all of this mixed up and baked in a beautiful pie. She is gone, but she used to be.
You mentioned that this is the song that kind of got you into Waitress, right?
Yes. This song is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And it's, I think the thing about this song, and I think what originally, and every time I listen to it, even still gets me, is it tells such a narrative. It tells such an emotional narrative. So, like, it doesn't necessarily, like, if you knew nothing about Waitress and you listened to it, it doesn't, like, tell you, like, specifically, like, well, this happened, and, like, I went on a journey, and, like, it's not that kind of song. It's, like, the emotional journey of, like, one day realizing that you've lost the person you used to be.
Yeah.
And wanting to find that person again. And I think that's what's so fascinating about the song. So it's part of what makes the song beautiful, and I think why it's had such, like, such success, like, even outside of just the musical, which is also in and of itself pretty interesting because some of the lyrics are fairly specific to, like, the musical, like, references to pie and things like that. And I read something in which I think they were talking to Sarah Bareilles about, like, how much success it's had even outside of the musical, and her saying that she used to be, like, self-conscious about performing it in concert because the lyrics were so, like, kind of specific to the musical in the sense of, like references to pies and things. But it ended up, like, having this widespread appeal because it's not actually about, like, actions. It's about, or, like, the context necessarily, for Jenna, it's about the context she's singing it in, but it's about like a more relatable thing that like many different kinds of people experience, not just like a pregnant waitress who bakes pies. It's which is a very specific demographic, mm-hmm. but it goes much broader than that, and that's how you get like everyone from like kids singing it to like adults. And yeah, it's, I just think it's a very relatable song to anyone who's like ever like found that they've like lost any piece of themselves that they used to like bring them joy.
Yeah, this is awesome. When the songs first kind of hit the scene, I saw like a zillion YouTube covers of it pop up. I'm sure it's on like the Do Not Sing list for any auditions. But if you haven't heard this song, I truly just recommend like pausing the podcast, come back, but pause the podcast and just like, I know I played a clip of it, but just like sit with headphones and just like listen to this whole song all the way through and try not to cry, or cry if you're like in a place where you feel comfortable crying. But it's just like, I think I heard this song before I knew anything about the rest of the musical. I think similar to you, unless you've had like no strife in your entire life, which like more power to you, but if you've gone through like anything difficult in your whole life, it will just pull at that. And it's the sense of, it's not a person like looking back and saying like, here's how far I've come. But it's also not a person saying like, everything is terrible and my life is terrible. It's a person saying like, things like, I've lost something and things are really bad, but like, I have to like accept and grow from that. And like, that's what the emotion is. And that is such a particular feeling, that makes it so powerful.
Yes. It's like, she sings about what she's lost, but the song ends with the like emotion and impression that like, but I want it back.
Yeah. On a completely different tonal note, the second song I ever got into from Waitress was Bad Idea.
Oh my god, every time I listen to Bad Idea, it is such a banger. Also, okay, I didn't realize how funny Bad Idea was. Like, I thought it was a great song and, like, so cool. Then I saw it on Broadway. It is hilarious. It is such a funny song. So Bad Idea itself is funny, but the reprise is literally comedic. Like, it's so funny.
Oh my god. And this is, if you don't know the show, this is where Jenna and her doctor start having an affair. And it's not good. It's just objectively not good. But we don't have to talk about that. But they sing a song called Bad Idea, which is basically, you're a pretty good bad idea is one of the lines.
Oh, I'd also like it to be known that one of the times I've seen this show was with our mutual friend who is going to med school. And when I think the first time that Jenna and Potomer like kissed, she was sitting next to me and just unintentionally automatically said, "Ugh," out loud.
Yes, it's not good behavior for doctors.
But it's fictional, so we can be into it.
Yeah, we just, sometimes things have flaws and we have to learn to accept those flaws.
Yes, but like the reprise of Bad Idea on Broadway is like, it's played for such laughs, like all the like very, very sexual pie scenarios.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't take my small children to see this show.
That's a good note, good note. But yeah, honestly, this song just slaps. Sarah Bareilles did not have to go that hard, but she did, and I appreciate her for it.
She's like, she's brilliant. This was, like, the fact that, I feel like when you hear about someone who's, like, known for, like, pop music, even though her music is fantastic, is, like, writing a musical, there's, like, a little part of you that's like, and she, like, is it, like, there's a little part of you that's like, is it gonna sound like a musical, like, someone took a pop album and like stuck it in between scenes, but she killed it.
Yeah. It sounds more like a musical than some other musicals do that are written by like musical theater people. That was not a very well structured sentence, but
I don't know who you're talking about. I can only wonder.
That's fine. I'm not referencing anyone in particular, but you get my drift, you know. And it manages to retain a very Sarah Bareilles quality to it. And so like she did a whole album that was just her covering songs from Waitress that she's written, of course. And it sounded natural for her of the arrangements that she did in it just to do them as solos. But it also works so well as a musical. And she like took her like personal stylings and adapted them to the art form in a way that, yeah, like you wouldn't expect to work so well together, but it really pulled it off.
It's just great. You can just listen to it again and again. And it's very varied. It has like multiple just amazing songs. And this is actually kind of a digression, but one like really amazing thing about Waitress is the depth of so many of the characters. Like one of the songs, When He Sees Me, is yes. like one of her. So both of Jenna's best friend characters each have their own big song, and they're both like very like well done, like real person could be singing this song, and just like show so much depth, because at the beginning like it feels almost like you could put each of the characters kind of into like a character stereotype box, like if you were to do it like based off of like the first 20 minutes of the show, like, oh, this is like the sassy like friend and this is like the dorky one. And then throughout the show and like through their characters and acting, but also through the songs, they just both have so much depth and like inner life. It's great. I love When He Sees Me.
Yeah, it's an adorable song, and it's about she's like scared to go on a date with someone, and she's, but it's so beautiful because she's listing all these things and she's like, what if he's doesn't like what I like, and what if he's an axe murderer, and like all the things you worry about when you're online dating. But then it's like, what if I like him, and what if,
yes,
I have to be vulnerable with someone, and you're like, ah, my heart.
God, what if when he sees me, I like him and he knows it, what if he opens up a door and I can't. Yeah.
It's like a kind of kooky song up to that point. Like there are heartfelt moments in it, but it's like, oh, he could be a serial killer, that kind of thing. And then it gets to like the heart of it, where she's just like, what if I like him and he doesn't like me? Oh.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like kind of going back to that all-female creative team that we were talking about earlier, you know? It's like you have your main character and she has her. And I don't mean to say that only women can write women, because that's not true. But I do think that there's an aspect of it where it's like, you not only have your main character who's female and is like has her own journey, but as well as that, she gets to have not one, but two female best friends who also have like, wow, much smaller full arcs and like complicated backstories, and are not set up as just like props to be next to her, but they actually get to have full inner lives that you can see even just through the windows in their solos. And you're like, oh, wow, like this is a realistic friendship.
Yes. Another note on characters, now that we're talking about them, let's talk about Ogie.
Tell me about Ogie.
So Ogie, I will start by saying, if you look at a description of Ogie's character, either from the movie or the musical, written on a sheet of paper, he is creepy as hell.
Don't. I will never let you let me leave. I promise I'm not lying. Go ahead, ask anybody who has seen me trying. I'm not going. If it seems like I did, I'm probably waiting outside.
He goes on a 5-minute online date with her that she says, I'm not interested, shows up at her place of business, sings a literal song about how I love you means you're never, ever, ever getting rid of me. In which the line in the song says, and if you think I'm gone, I'm probably waiting outside.
Yeah, it's very creepy.
Ogie is on a piece of paper is extremely creepy. In the movie, Ogie is creepy. Like, all those stalker vibes that description just gave is, like, very much how Ogie is, like, his character is depicted in the movie as well, in the music. And I didn't, so before, just listening to the songs, I did not like Ogie. I did not like the song. I was not a fan. I saw the musical. I think I saw it with Chris Fitzgerald, the first Ogie. This was a delight. Ogie is an absolute delight in this show. I believe in his and Dawn's love.
Oh my god.
That entire role is so, like, that is such a difficult role because literally you have to play it perfectly. All the charm is resting on, like, if the actor is able to pull off the charm, because otherwise everything about Ogie's creepy.
Yeah, because even like listening to the songs, I'm like, this is a bop, but I'm also concerned. And I figured that in the show, there's probably more context to what's happening that I just...
No, okay.
Well, yeah, then I guess it really just come down to, like, character portrayal and the ability to make it genuinely innocent.
Yes. Like, all of the Ogies I've seen have managed to do it, but every time I've seen, like, a new one, there's a part of me, like, being like, oh, hope this doesn't go wrong. And this is just one of those things that in real life, no matter how charming an Ogie would be, he'd still be creepy.
Because yeah.
It's just creepy. But in the musical, like, people are cheering in the theater for Ogie because he's so adorable in the show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of those things that it's, you're like, wow, I like this on stage, and on real life, it would not be good.
In real life, it would probably be illegal, so.
Yeah.
Don't aspire to be Ogie, but enjoy him in Waitress.
There's really no relationships in this show that would be good in real life. Most of them are bad in the show, too. But even the ones that are good in the show, you're like, that's, nope. It's not a place to go for relationship advice. Jenna and Pottermore's relationship is literally illegal, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is how you lose your license.
Yep.
In case anyone's trying to throw away all of your years of med school, there's one way to do it.
Wouldn't it be funny if the show ended with him losing his license? As would actually happen if this happened in real life. The one last thing I want to mention on specific songs from me is the fact that this musical includes a contraction ballet, which I'm extremely into. What does this look like on stage?
It is gorgeous. So a big thing about, like, the choreography of Waitress is, I'm trying to figure out how to put this in words. It's very, like, movement, or it's a very, like, movement oriented kind of choreography. So, like, a lot of, like, movements in unison. So, like, if you think of, like, contraction ballet, it's, so this is actually out of unison, but it's very much like dimmed lights, like the kind of, like, extras, pregnant women standing around, and as the breathing goes, there's, like, movements, like, bending over, like, you just, like, got hit with, like, a contraction. Like, it's very, almost, like, it makes me think of, like, water ballet.
Hmm.
Like, those kinds of movements. And in a lot of parts of the musical where there's, like, that kind of, like, rising and falling sound, kinds of sounds, you'll have people, like, doing, like, hand, like, arms raising up and going down, like, in a curve, if you can picture that, like, in unison. It's very beautiful. The movement in the show is very subtle and just gorgeous.
It's just such an interesting creative choice, is to turn birth into a ballet and then to have, like, all that movement with it. That's all right, I really want to see Waitress. We've talked about the show a bunch. We've talked about that you love it so deeply and the songs are amazing and all this stuff. But, like, why do you love it? And why have you gone to see it so many times?
So why I love the show is a lot of the things we've discussed, in addition to just the overall emotional arc of the characters is very easy to really, like, be invested in, and to see play out. And it doesn't feel overly simplified. It feels very real. Like, it feels like real people you could be watching. And I think that's part of what kind of brings me back to seeing it so many times. Because there's some shows that I love that I wouldn't, even though I love them, I wouldn't necessarily like watch them over and over again. Whereas Waitress, it comes down to the simultaneously simple and complicated story, and the very much focus on the emotional, like, live and like lives of the characters. Because at its essence, like, if this were like the real world, like some random woman out there who like likes to bake pies and like is pregnant and doesn't want to be the affair of a doctor's more out of the norm, but aside from that, like, it's not the most earth-shattering story. It's not like a war or a grand journey. It's the character's inner, it's the character's life. Like, it's Jenna's life and her feelings, and I think that's something that can never get old, because it's something that even if you've never been in the situation that she's in, you can understand on a human level, and isn't something you can get bored of hearing about and seeing because it's so real.
That's what I think some of the best musical theater is it's universal through its specificity, and it's really like kind of like a really small story about one person almost, but because what she's so living and human, and you feel that in the show and in the music, that you're able to take all of that emotion and feel it in your own life and relate to it probably in different ways at different points in your life. Like, I can't imagine going to see this show if I was a mother. Like, oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. We didn't even talk. One of the big things throughout the whole show is Jenna talking about her mother and talking to her mother and passed away, and all the things that her mother taught her, and the way that like baking connects them, and the idea of being a mother is a really big thing throughout the show that like I don't even know how to talk about, because I mean I have a mother but I am not one. So
yes, I also have one but I'm not one, so can't speak to it on that level. But I think one of the very interesting things as well is this kind of a recurring thread throughout the show of Jenna's like missing her mother and also feeling in a way that she's afraid of living the same life that her mother led, and her child like living the same life that she led, like repeating a pattern, because Jenna's childhood also wasn't a super positive one. And in the relationship she's in throughout the show, her husband and father of her child is not a great person. And there's like that recurring fear throughout the show as well of her not wanting to continue the cycle almost. Like, there's this moment that she says something like, she's speaking about her mother and like, oh yeah, she taught me to make pies. And then she says like, she would be so sad to see how my life turned out. She had such big dreams for me.
So God.
I can't imagine what seeing this show like as a mother, the level of emotion.
Well, I'm devastated now.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't know. Yeah, that's not in a song. It's really sad.
Wow, I'm just gonna think about that for a while. Oh my gosh, there's so much talk about this show. It is. Obviously, we're fans, but I think at this point we're going to roll over to the lightning round to finish us out. So, Janelle, what is your favorite song in Waitress?
She Used to Be Mine.
All right. Yeah. We've covered that. Yes. What's your favorite line in the show?
So there's a point where, ignoring obviously the issues with this relationship, but she kind of breaks down as talking to Hotimer just about the things that are like worrying her and just kind of expressing her emotion and like feeling like safe enough to like just express it all to someone. And he holds her and she has a voiceover speaking to her baby, and she says something like, dear baby, I think this isn't a song, I hope that one day, like,
dear baby, I hope someday Somebody wants to hold you for 20 minutes straight. They don't pull away. They don't look at your face. And they don't try to kiss you. All they do is wrap you up in their arms and hold on tight without an ounce of selfishness to it. I hope you become addicted, baby. I hope you become addicted to saying things and having them matter to someone.
Things and having them matter.
I'm literally crying.
Yeah, so I'd say like the end of that, the expression of just that everyone deserves to be able to say things that and like have them and know that they mean something and that they matter is a beautiful line.
Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And it's so even just that simple, beautiful statement and just like the devastating knowledge that to this person's life, that believing that they matter is an achievement and like not something that they have all the time is in itself makes me want to just lie down for a while. Oh, we have to finish this episode before I start crying. Who is your favorite character?
My favorite character is Jenna, followed by Dawn.
And if you were going to perform in Waitress, who would you want to play?
I would want to play Jenna. She's like has, again, because she's written like a real person, has like such a range of like emotions expressed in this show, like from like excited to like, I don't know, can I say like naughty? Is that the word? Like, she's very much to like devastated. It's like very, I think it'd be like a great role to be able to play.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
I'd recommend anyone see this show. Like I said, it's very relatable, even though it's about a very specific story. It's very relatable on an emotional level. As I said earlier, probably don't bring small children. I would actually recommend probably, I think kids could enjoy this show, like older kids, like tweens, teens, but I don't think they would get as much out of it as like someone like late teens and up. I think they'd enjoy the music and like get the general storyline. I'm just thinking to like the first time I watched the movie Waitress and I just didn't get as much out of it as a younger child or as like a preteen or early teen because it is so hinged on like the emotional storyline and it's the emotions of like someone who's kind of lived a longer life. Mm-hmm. I think that just if you can only see it once and you're like, should I see it when I'm 15 or see it when I'm 18? I would say when you're 18.
It's a very specific scenario, but I get what you mean. And finally, if you were going to combine this show with another musical, what would you pick?
Oh, ooh, this question. It's so focused on the humanity. I actually wouldn't combine it with anything. Can I answer that? Do I have to pick one?
I mean, you would be the first person to refuse to pick something. Well, I will say, just wait, some people have interpreted this question where if it was like, if you were going to do a double feature.
Oh, okay.
What would you, if you could say, what would you pair it with if you don't want it, if you like truly think it is immaculate and don't want to touch it?
Okay. I would pair it with, I've never seen this, but I've listened to the soundtrack, weirdly, Bring It On, the musical.
Okay.
Specifically, like, I'm thinking of this song that Campbell, one of, like, the lead character of that show, sings this song called, like, One Perfect Moment that is basically, like, about how, like, all her life she's, like, dreamed of winning this cheerleading competition and, like, just working. It's very much, though it sounds like, oh, that's very specific, it's very much a song about, like, this teenager singing about, like, how much she's put into this and like people don't realize, like people on the outside, like even her friends and the rest of the people on the team don't, it's almost like they don't, she doesn't feel that they have seen or that she's let them see like how much she like really craves this on like a deeper level than like just, oh, I want to win. It's like this, it's a surprisingly serious song. And that's the song I'm thinking of when I would pair it with this.
All right. Really nice. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on again, Janelle. Always lovely to have you.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
And thank you all for listening. Goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. And you have a few minutes, I would love to get your input at the listener survey linked in the description. See you next week.
Just a second. Hi, Ozra. Hi, sorry. I'm not there yet. I'm gonna be a little late. I'm probably gonna text you guys and apologize and ask someone to order for me. I was recording a podcast with Quinn, who's currently here. Say hi to Quinn.
Hi, Quinn.
So yeah, I've got a jet. So this is another aside. God, you're gonna have fun editing this.